everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program. On the other side of the glass, we welcome you to the program in the We're on the Bustos Media Campus, where we've got five radio stations under one roof, and we are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. Today is January the 26th, 2024. We are now into our 14th year of the radio show and the 36th year for me in Tucson broadcasting. Worldwide live listening podcasts at buckmastershow.com. Also a very active presence on Facebook and X, formerly known as Twitter. Our live line for our telephone interviews, 790-2040. For comments or questions for the police chief today, it's presented by Rincon Ventures, the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media friends who prominently display the Buckmaster Show logo on their website include TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group, which includes Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. My co-host from the media with me, Tim Steller, today, 2022 Arizona Newspaper Association of the Year, Journalist of the Year. Tim, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you, Bill?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. Our Friday Focus interview today, we welcome back to the show Tucson's Police Chief Chad Kazmar. Chief, how are you?
Good, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing well. And again, thank you for asking. We've got a ton of ground to cover. Tim posted on his very robust Facebook page that he would be on the program. So got a lot of questions from listeners. But let's begin with what the Washington Post reports is a downward trend, which we love to see, in overall crime in America's big cities, going back to the pre-pandemic level. Has that extended to Tucson, Arizona, Chief?
Yeah, I'm happy to report to the community. It sure has, Bill.
What do you have for us?
So what's translated into Tucson for us is when we talk about Part 1 violent crime, rape, murder, robbery, those types of things, we saw a 13% reduction year-to-date last year and a 9% reduction overall in a five-year average. So we like to look at year-to-date, but we also look, you know, we stretch that over 5 years to really see how we're doing. And then we talk about property crime, envision, you know, Part 1 property crime, your house being burglarized, your car being stolen. That was a flat, pretty much flat year-to-date, but down 10% on a five-year average. So I was really excited to see those numbers hold down. And, you know, I want to say it's not only our own commitment here in Tucson to evidence-based strategies and trying to be smart with the way that we do the work, but there's certainly other chiefs across America are committing to the same strategies.
Multiple questions coming in on social media about traffic enforcement. It's a huge area of concern, as you well know, Chief Kazmar.
It is. You know, look, I'm really still disappointed. We had 95 traffic fatalities last year. The makeup of those looked very different than the year before. And in 2022, we had 99. And if we run down, you know, how those occurred last year, we had 29 pedestrian fatalities. The year before that, we had 49. Last year, we had 7 bicycle fatalities. We had 6 the year before. Last year, we had 20 motorcycle fatalities. We had 17 the year before. And last year we had 39 vehicle fatalities, and we had 27 the year before. And as far as this year, you know, we're double the rate year to date at 10 this year, with 8 pedestrians, 1 bicycle, and 1 motorcycle. So what does that translate into is we still need the community's help to change driving behavior post-COVID, like we've talked about here on the show before. We had nearing 35,000 traffic stops. I don't ask the officers to write tickets. I ask them to make the stop and then give them, you know, the ability to decide whether it's a verbal warning, a written warning, an issue ticket, or some combination of both. But they stepped up big time in a big way. But here's the thing, Bill. Engineering plays just a bigger role. Community behavior plays a role. Please, if you're listening to the show, go home tonight. Pay attention to your speeds going home. Stay off your cell phone. Model that behavior for your children. You know, you can't tell them don't text and drive, and then they watch you do that. And look, I'll admit, you know, even my wife occasionally gets on me and says, hey, set the example.
And I was thinking about it driving in, Chief. How much time do you actually gain by, you know, really hitting the gas to get to your destination? I drove in here today and I said, I'm going to go the speed limit on from my place in the central foothills to work. And guess what? The difference was within 2 minutes of, I'm not saying I speed every day to work, but it was within 2 minutes of on my usual 20-minute drive to the station.
You really don't save any time. And we've all seen that moron that's, you know, trying to jump, you know, it's weaving in and out aggressively, and they end up at the same light, right? Mm-hmm. And we all use Google Maps or some version of that. My wife makes for me when I say MapQuest, I'm dating myself, but it tells you what time you're going to get there. And it is, it's like spot on 99% of the time. So, you know, keep off your phone. We still have a jaywalking, you know, pedestrian problem in this community. We have a lot of cyclists out there, a lot of runners, and you know, everybody can play a role into making our streets a safer place.
All right, let's bring in Tim Steller.
Chief, you mentioned the 8 pedestrians who have been killed so far this year on Tucson roads, which is a really big increase, or just a spate, I guess you could say. Are there any patterns or any explanation for what, why this has happened so far in January this year?
Jaywalking, Tim, continues to be a big problem. We enjoy our dark skies here, so people are dressed in dark clothing. They're jaywalking, you know, in between intersections, and I think what we'll find out when, you know, the full investigations are complete, that fentanyl is playing a big role. So we have people that are out there; they're extremely inhibited from, you know, making the right decisions and you know, when that happens, bad things happen. And so it's still, you know, we're directly seeing from last year that narcotics are playing a role in pedestrian fatalities. And certainly we're seeing that be the case this year.
I noticed a New York Times report the other day that really surprised me. It showed that in the increase in pedestrian fatalities that's happened all over the country for the last 10 to 12 years, the daytime, the number of deaths in the daytime over that period has stayed the same nationwide, while the number of deaths in the nighttime accounts for the entire increase in pedestrian deaths nationwide. Is that a pattern we're seeing here locally too?
It is a similar pattern. And what I would tell you is, you know, the lighting technology in 1995, you know, any vehicle, let's say Honda Civic in a modern day vehicle with lighting is very different in what it lights up. So lighting technology makes a difference. Vehicles are quieter, you know, the often, especially at night, people's windows are rolled up, they're listening to music, they're talking on the phone, they're more distracted than they ever have been. And our populations have become more dense, and that's the case here in Tucson as well.
What is the department policy on hot pursuit? This is a listener question.
Yeah, so like most major cities in the country, we have a pretty strict pursuit policy, and effectively we don't pursue vehicles over civil traffic. There has to be a violent crime nexus or an immediate extent of potential injury if we don't get involved with somebody to engage somebody in a pursuit.
Another quick listener question. Blue light installed at Grant and Craycroft. What's it about? What is it doing?
Another great question. It's another way to increase awareness and grab somebody's attention at a light. We're testing that here in town. We're still in a testing phase. We're not in an enforcement phase on that yet. But what we want people to do is to pay attention. Yellow means stop. Yellow doesn't mean, you know, go 10 mile an hour faster to make it through that light.
All right. Helicopters. What about the use of helicopters? How many do we have? How are they being utilized?
We have 3 helicopters.
Another listener question.
Yes, sir. We have 3 helicopters that have made up our support unit. They are all nearing life cycle, which means you've been working the last year and a half to have the conversation in the community with the elected officials to evaluate our air platform. Helicopters fly about 500 to 600 feet in the air. We have 2 deployable, and then 1 is a training helicopter. And the way that they work is they provide tactical assistance to the officer. So if we get a burglary call, there's a fenced yard, there's, you know, not 2 officers available for a call, that they become the eye in the sky. We also use them in a pursuit type environment too, where a helicopter can fly above and give a bird's eye view. We're working to change our platform. I'm looking to get rid of one of my, you know, retire one of my helicopters, my oldest one, and acquire a plane. The nice part about a plane is, you know, we can be 8,000 feet up in the sky, so you're not going to hear the reverberation of the helicopter. You know, we've all been under it, we've all heard it, and it's loud, and it can't be disruptive to a community, and we certainly have gotten that feedback. But that is a surveillance platform, and the reason I want that is, you know, furthering our commitment to violent crime reduction. Our criminals know in town what we will pursue for and what we weren't, and they absolutely take advantage of that. So there's a violent crime component to where we can safely land an offender at their home and then do a search warrant there, so we don't put the community at risk. And there's also a component, if you've been in different parts of our town where you see the intersection takeovers and you've seen our quads and ATVs and motorcycles that want to drive around town or downtown.
They take an intersection.
Will not stop for us. It's a game for them, and they know we can't pursue them. And so I really have no effective tool right now. I don't have an effective tool without the ability of, again, tracking those folks until they go home or they land at a different place, and then I can effect a traffic stop.
Here's Tim Steller.
On that topic, are you saying, you mean with a helicopter you track them, you can track them, but with on the ground you can't? Is that what you're saying?
No, we try not to use the helicopter. Is not very, very covert, right? So for the technology that we use to monitor behavior, they have to be lower and you can hear them. So the gig's pretty much up when you bring the helicopter. And that's part of the point. If somebody runs from us and we deploy small unit tactics, part of the strategy is when somebody hears that helicopter that they stop running, and then we put, different officers in different positions in that area, and then the helicopter can use heat sensing technology or other types of technology to help us find that person.
Listener question, sex trafficking task force.
Yes, we presented to mayor and council. You can get about a 30-minute conversation. If you didn't have time, you can go to the city website and watch that. And it's really, Bill and Tim, just an expansion to our listeners. Human trafficking is a huge problem in sex trafficking in this country. January was sex trafficking or Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and sex trafficking is correlated to that. And the idea is that it's a $1.5 billion industry in this country. It's a commodity that a criminal, when you sell a stolen vehicle, it's only once. If you sell narcotics, it's only once. But if you think about human trafficking, people can be sold and resold and resold. And so it's a very difficult crime to investigate. The victims are difficult to connect with and find. And so it's done in this community in every major city, and a lot of these acts are being facilitated over the internet. So we have invested additional resources and have different partners that are helping us scale our program, so that basically if you're running an illicit, or you're going to illicit massage parlors here in town, there are a lot of great legal massage parlors that practice holistic medicine and spend their life's work for this craft. But we also have some in town that are frankly trafficking humans, and we're paying attention and we're going to address that this year.
Here's Tim Steller.
Going back to the numbers that you talked about, I checked at the end of the year, the last murder that I saw your department homicide that I saw your department report was toward the end of December, and it was like the 62nd, 63rd homicide of the year. I checked back to the previous year. I think that's about 20-some less than there were in Tucson in 2022. So is that right? We've had maybe a 20% drop in murders, 20-something percent?
I knew you were going to be here, Tim, so I did my math. So we had 53 incidents last year that resulted with 58 victims. And so we had a 21% reduction that I'm happy to report on of homicide victims year-to-date last year. And if we go look at a two-year snapshot, because we had a really horrible year 2 years ago, we're at a 32% reduction over 2 years.
So I remember when that spike in homicides occurred that you all were pointing to national trends and saying, well, we're affected by what's going on in the country. Is it just the same that we're affected by what's going on in the country again, or are you guys doing something special, or is somebody doing something special in Tucson to reduce them by 30% over 2 years?
No, we have, all these things play into our commitment of gun violence reduction. That's, I'll remind everybody, the public safety partnership, a federal opportunity that we're involved with, our commitment to evidence-based strategies, our place network investigations, where we picked three locations and had 75% to 80% reductions of gun crime in those areas. And we took a holistic approach to not just making it a police problem, but really evaluating why are these crimes occurring and what puts people in these places that draws these crimes. So no, it's not happenstance. I don't think it's happenstance in other major cities, because I go to meetings and we're all learning from each other. And frankly, the federal government is stepping up and helping us. So we're involved with the Bureau of Justice Assistance, to mouthful, Office of Justice Programs, Community-Based Violence Intervention and Prevention Initiative. We manage over $20 million of federal grants that help us be very intentional about the way that we can be laser focused and precision and use data to go into neighborhoods and figure out who's actually, creating the issues that we have and working in. And I think those are the results. I want to also give the officers credit too, though. The officers are out there every day in patrol, and it's not just our homicide, unit that's knocking it out of the park with an 89.65% solvency rate when the national average is at 52%. That means we have amazing detectives, the patrol officers are doing great work, and we have community that wants to engage with us. So the officers are also engaging in something we call precision-oriented policing, which means we put them in specific areas throughout town at specific times to disrupt crime.
When we continue with Chief Kazmar, more listener questions, and I've got a ton of them here in front of me, and we'll start off the questioning after the break. When will the police force grow? Cindy wants to know that. That's what we'll start with. Tim Steller is here from the Star, and it's Buckmaster on a Friday with Tucson's police chief. Want to talk about what do you think I want to talk about right now, Tim?
Something to do with sugar, flour, and butter, I think.
We're talking about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. There is big news that's going to be occurring up at Mona's. Steve and the team have acquired a liquor license. Yes, Tim's going, whoa! Yes, they're putting in the wine coolers so people will be able to have their champagne and orange juice with their Danish and their breakfast. That's coming very soon to the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Check out their website, monasdanishbakery.com. Take a break right here. A lot more with the chief and Tim right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. The Friday Focus interview today, Chief Kazmar is here from the Tucson Police Department. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line for our telephone interviews presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Cindy, one of our listeners, asked, when will the police department grow?
Okay, great question. We have been growing, but when we talk about growing, we have to make the distinction between commission resources, and that's probably what she's referring to over total growing. So we've grown the department about 6 to 7% each year. I've been back. We have 1,200 folks right now. 820 are commission resources. I have 50 of those. 820 are in different various stages of training. Academy class started on Monday. Excited to see them. I went out and saw them earlier this week.
I believe you ran with them.
I ran with the graduating class that I'll be giving badges to next month, early next month. And then I spent a little time watching some of the initial physical fitness training for class 24-1. So yeah, it's good to connect with the folks before they come out. We have 142 community service officers that are out, and we have 17 professional staff investigators that are helping us expand our investigative professional staff team members.
What does that mean, a professional staff investigator?
It's basically, if you know, the quick version is what you see out in the community as a community service officer. Think about that as an investigative support. So we ran a process. It was wildly popular, and our goal was to get 20 folks. We got 17 that have made it so far through the training, and these were folks with 3 years of investigative experience or a college degree.
Andrea weighs in, listening to the Bill Buckmaster Show right now, interviewing Police Chief Kazmar on KVOI. Glad to hear homicides are down. Chief, is there a particular dangerous time for homicides or murders in this community?
Great question. Between 42% of our homicides last year occurred between 9 p.m. and 3 a.m. So I say this frequently, especially if you have kids. Know where your kids are. Good things don't happen anywhere in this country after, you know, midnight. So be home if you're not working. You know, we really break these things down to better understand them. We saw an increase last year of juveniles, almost doubled of incidents of juveniles being involved with gun violence at really young ages, 12, 14, 13. You know, so have these talks with your kids. If you're thinking at home, like, my kid couldn't be sucked into this, you just don't know anymore. So to have the talk with them. 13 of our homicides were domestic violence, and 20 of them occurred in a residence.
All right, let's bring in Tim Steller, who has some questions for Chief Kazmar, who is the 24th police chief, and the history of the TPD is a lengthy one, 152 years. The department has been around a long time.
Yes, sir.
So the numbers you just said about commissioned officers surprised me, because I swear that the last time we talked about this, you were talking about maybe 600 and some commissioned officers, but now you're talking about 770 or so plus 50 in the academy.
It's actually 820 minus the 50. So within that 820, we have 50 in training. We've been floating in the 750 number. We had the slowest level of attrition, thankfully. That's how we're growing in size last year. We're averaging about 5 a month, and we peaked at losing 11 officers a month in 2022. So we can't hire our way out of that. So it's really about retaining the amazing staff that we have while we slowly try to rebuild the organization. But just want to be very clear, in 8 years, we have yet to grow, you know, the commission ranks of this organization, and our community is growing, and that has to occur.
Yeah. Raul, listener Raul, joined several other listeners with questions centering around requirements that officers perhaps live within the Tucson city limits, and perhaps a contractual agreement that would obligate an officer to work a certain amount of time before leaving Tucson for wherever. So let's address those questions generally about incentives.
Great question. We don't have, there's no contractual timeline when we put somebody through an academy of how long they have to work with us. What we're seeing is we are not losing officers to other organizations at the rates that we once were. So the, you know, mayor and council and community support has been amazing. They've been compensated well. You know, we're always looking to make sure that we're remaining competitive. We're working, you know, Ford has promised us that we're going to get our patrol fleet updated this year, which we've been on, you know, waiting for new pursuit vehicles for over 2 years. We have the capacity for it. It's just been an issue of actually acquiring those vehicles. So we're giving the officers the tools that they need to be successful. And there's always more work to be done. But we are actually, it's really work that's not needed, because we're just not seeing officers leave to our surrounding jurisdictions at the rates we once did.
Here's Tim Steller, the Star.
So just thinking about the traffic issue, which seems to be surprisingly the thing that I'm hearing most from people, would, if it were possible, and it isn't right now legally, Would red light cameras be helpful to ticket people who are running red lights in the city?
100%, absolutely. It was really unfortunate that those went away, and there's even current legislation that we're fighting as Arizona Chiefs of Police Association to further hamper what kind of technology that we can use. So again, we can enforce our way out of this. There's an engineering component, there's a technology component, and I'd love nothing more than one day to be able to go back to the voters and say, hey, we really need to bring these back because they create safer streets.
All right, let's go now on the live line. Had a lot of social media interaction. Now let's go for the telephone live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Debbie is on the line. She has a question for the chief. Go ahead, Debbie.
Hi, Chief. I have another traffic question. You've said a couple of times that you think it's more engineering, or engineering is as important, at least, as enforcement. I disagree. I watch some really close calls, and I see police who see the very same things. People making left-hand turns when there are they don't have any semblance of a green light. And people blowing through intersections, again, regardless of the light that they're facing. What if we had policemen at the intersections that are known for this who stop these guys? Go after them. Be aggressive. And what can I as an individual do to get you to be more aggressive?
Okay. Thank you, Debbie. This is all about having the officers be more aggressive.
So thanks, Debbie, for the question. As a past motor officer, and I'm currently recertified, and I maintain that to go ride out there and do traffic enforcement, hopefully one of these days occasionally with the team. They're out there doing the enforcement, Debbie, but 1,200 dedicated team members can't by ourselves modify a population of 500,000 people. So this is a community problem. We are out there writing tickets. We are doing the enforcement. The officers completed over 122,000 calls for service. So when you see them at a light and you go, man, why didn't they pull that person over? Because they're probably going to a priority call, which is their responsibility on a priority level one or two call before they can conduct that traffic stop. So trust me, we get just as frustrated as our community members when we see those types of driving behavior. And we're going to continue to work on it. This is no excuses about staffing or the size of the department or what we're not doing. We're going to have to continue to work our hands wrapped around the situation in Tucson.
I sympathize with listener Carol, upset about fireworks. And I sympathize because, yes, it is an absolute terror, as Carol says, for her dogs. And those of us who love animals, it's horrible. Chief.
I have a German short-haired pointer that spends his time in the bathtub or a closet on 4th of July. It's one of our worst holidays for that reason, too, at home. It is a challenge. I would say build relationships with your neighbors before 4th of July and let them know how their behavior is impacting your life would be step number one. Step number two is, to continue to have dialogue with county and city leadership about our ordinances that impact those folks' ability to purchase those devices and use them.
All right, go ahead, Tim.
Sorry, a real quick follow-up on that. Is it not prohibited to use at some level of fireworks within the city?
It is, but I'll tell you, on 4th of July, we're so inundated with those types of calls, they become, impossible to go to every firework call that's going on. So really, we're probably going to prioritize the loud parties and where we pretend to have the potential for violent crime to occur when those types of things. And this really goes back into what kind of community does Tucson want to be, right? And so whether you're talking about running red lights or your neighbor next to you and their behavior, like there's got to be some personal ownership for this entire committee to impact those.
Jessica is concerned about, she's wondering if TPD currently encourages undocumented people to report crimes as a victim or witness by offering the document needed to apply for a U visa.
We certainly do. We have a U visa program. We volunteer with local faith groups to get IDs to folks who can't get those. We have a huge problem in this country with a lack of meaningful immigration reform and a secure border for the past two administrations, and that directly impacts us as a border city. So that's a whole nother show and its own topic. But we do the best job we can to make sure that vulnerable populations know that they can call us if they're a victim of crime, including our are undocumented folks who live here in this community.
The tier system, 1, 2, and 3 for the houseless individuals or the homeless camps, is it freeing up cops?
It is. It certainly
to do
is.
Other
it,
things.
It's working. We're only going to specific tier 3 camps when it's a safety concern and issue. So those numbers continue to reduce. I think we're doing, you know, the best job we can with the resources we have that have been invested under the Community Safety, Health, and Wellness Program. There's always opportunity to continue to scale that in those numbers of non-traditional public safety resources. And so we can be as responsive to possible to community members who are reporting those camps.
Here's Tim Steller of the Star.
Chief, this discussion of homeless people, which is ever present in Tucson, it sometimes occurs to me that we're using the wrong word. And I'm not talking about how homeless versus unhoused or unsheltered or you know, whatever is the more sensitive phrase. I'm talking about, people see people who are on the streets looking bedraggled or what have you. And as I've looked into this thing about the loop that I was telling you about, it occurred to me that really what we're talking about there is drug users, people who are high, people who are dealing, that kind of thing, and that they overlap maybe with the homeless population, but that they're not one and the same. Is that right, or what's going on?
No, great point. Many of the folks that we see out there do have places to stay and do have family members in town, but based upon decisions they're making, they're not allowed to be there. Or they're out in our community buying and selling drugs because they have a substance misuse disorder. So we affected over 5,000, actually 5,100 arrests last year, narcotics arrests, over 200 deflections. I'll say we're not gaining ground on that problem yet. Fentanyl is a driver of our unsheltered population issues and mental health issues in this community. My call to action for every organization, both, you know, the city of Tucson, the county, all of our nonprofits is let's reflect on, you know, what we did last year, what worked and what didn't work. And then let's all make, you know, changes that impact this system. So we get different results because, we're not gaining ground on this fentanyl issue.
Margarita wonders about the active shooter protocol that has been recommended by the Department of Justice coming out of Uvalde. Reaction to that, Chief?
We review all after action reports that come out of the Department of Justice. I'll give credit to Chief Chris Nanos. I'm sorry, Sheriff Chris Nanos. I'm the chief. He's a sheriff. It's school safety and making sure that our kids, our most vulnerable population in town, is a priority for every public safety head in this region, I think in our broader community. So Chris pulled us together, gosh, over a year and a half ago, 17 different school districts to make sure that we'd start talking about how could we prevent something like this from happening here? And if it did happen, how would we respond? So I wish I could sit here and tell you an active killer type environment won't happen in Tucson, but we do everything in our power to work with school leadership to make sure that it doesn't happen through a lens of prevention. And I'll tell you that this community of public safety officials are ready for that. Our officers, our deputies, our troopers, our federal partners are all ready to protect our children in this community.
Okay, Tim.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I was really impressed with one thing. I have a child at Tucson High, and earlier this year, there was an incident there where people thought a student had a gun. Turned out the student didn't have a gun. But before you all knew that, I my daughter's in there. She's hearing footsteps pounding down the hallways above her. And later, I think I came to understand what that was, which was police running down the halls to find this guy who they thought might have a gun. And later there was video that came out from students and stuff. And I tell you, I really appreciated that. Just the fact it was the opposite of the Uvalde reaction, in the sense that you guys, there wasn't any actual gun present, let alone gunfire, but the police were running toward it as if there were. So I really appreciated that.
No, thanks, Tim. Look, I was on that call. There were 26 of us that responded that day, and there were less than 5 rifles. And what that means, so the listenership can understand that, is when we send an officer into a school, into an active killer environment, our goal there is to neutralize the threat and stop the loss of life. When we send officers into a school with handguns and there's a long gun involved, you are basically asking that officer to more probable than not sacrifice their life to try to save those kids. And so we've been working hard ever since to make sure that we expand our rifle program, which we have with mayor and council support. It shows the dedication of how hard this job is. We want our officers to be empathetic. We want them to do traffic stop, and we want them to run down a hallway and maybe never see their family again to make sure that your child comes home to you. So couldn't be more proud of our workforce.
Julie has just tuned in, and she wanted to hear the entire interview and is wondering how she can hear the entire interview. Well, that's a simple one. By our podcasts at buckmastershow.com. We should have this interview posted by dinner time tonight with the chief. Tim, anything more before we let the chief go?
No, I think we can move on, Bill.
All right. Anything else you would like to add?
Go ahead. Thanks, Bill and Tim. I just, in all the listeners who called in with questions, I want you to know I couldn't be more proud of the work that the community and the department are doing in collaboration with each other. We are doing a great job, but we have a lot of work to do, and we're going to continue to roll our sleeves up and get that work done. Our effort to continue to reduce violent crime and gun crime in our community is going to remain a focus, make our streets safer, and increase our staffing, and have the best connection possible to the community. And we look forward to another year of partnership and collaboration with you.
What about your hiring protocol? If someone is listening and they don't want to carry a weapon, a gun, what can they still serve?
They can. We have a ton of positions. Our community service officers, our professional staff, we're hiring analysts, we're hiring scientists, we're hiring police officer recruits. So you can go to jointucsonpd.org or publicsafety.tucsonaz.gov to find out more. We have a community information session at 1310 West Miracle Mile this Sunday from 3 to 4. We have another virtual session Wednesday the 31st from 6 to 7. So we need great people that want to come work for us. 24 years of public safety, 27 years as a public servant for the city, total time for me. I hope my two boys follow my footsteps. So we're an amazing employer. Come check us out.
How about a reaction to this news kind of broke about 2 weeks ago during the program about a city manager, Mike Ortega, who many believe has just done a terrific job in his 7 years with the city?
You know, I'm really going to miss him. I certainly developed and grown a lot based upon him challenging me and giving me this opportunity to be chief of police along with mayor and council. So we're sad to see him go. 7 years is a good run as a major city manager, and I think he's developed a great leadership team. And I'm working for his number two, Timothy Tamir, as deputy city manager, who by charter, you know, looks like will be our interim for a bit after city manager gets us through the budget cycle. So I think my message to Tucson is we got a great group of directors. We got a great leadership that's been succession trained by the city manager. I'll be standing by with all of you to see what mayor and council's decisions make.
And Tim was with us on the program last Friday, our Friday Focus interview, Tim Tamir, and he is ready to step in, certainly very well qualified. So whether or not they'll do a national search, I wouldn't think it would be necessary, just my personal view. I think Tim is more than ready to do the job. Anyway, all right. Chief, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure to see you. Tim, I want to talk to you, so I'm going to keep you around. Okay. You'll be questioned by Bill Buckmaster after this.
All right.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Chief Chad Kazmar. Wow, we covered a lot of ground, Tim Steller,
sure
with the Chief.
Sure did, yeah.
Lots of listener questions coming in on social media. Very much appreciated. A story you've been watching, and the whole community has really been watching this ever since the news broke that the original number that was thrown out there was like the UA was in the red for, what, $240 million. And the number's been, I guess, changed a little bit. But ever since this news broke, this story has almost taken on a life of its own, like a wildfire.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And it really blew up last night. Every time, I imagine every time the UA folks think they have the thing kind of under control, something else happens. And last night what happened was the governor sent and publicly posted a letter to the Arizona Board of Regents asking for several important changes in their approach to the UA financial crisis. And it was stronger than I expected. It brought up issues, frankly, I hadn't even thought of. And that's surprising because I've been in constant conversations with my colleagues about this story for months now.
Yeah.
The issue that I found really interesting that the governor brought up was, so the Arizona Board of Regents has assigned their executive director, John Arnold, who is the former budget director for, I believe, Governor Jan Brewer.
Yeah.
So he's a guy with experience in this sort of thing.
That's how I know the name.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I thought he was one of our previous governors. I remember the name John Arnold, so he's very much in the picture here.
Yeah, also worked for Fife Symington, I learned recently. Yeah.
All right.
So the regents assigned him to take over leadership of UA's budget office and financial operations with the stepping down from that role of Lisa Rolney. Well, something that I hadn't thought of and that the governor said is that this is like a conflict of interest, or it at least has the appearance of a conflict of interest, that the regents in their role as overseers need to be separated from the U of A.
Yeah.
And I started spinning out on this a little bit thinking, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, to the extent that the regents have culpability in what's played out here, it isn't good to have somebody who is a regent's employee running the finances. Now, I don't suspect John Arnold's motives or anything like that. I mean, I think he's just trying to kind of sort it out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at least hypothetically, or at least in terms of appearances, mm-hmm. there is a possible bad look there, mm-hmm. bad optics.
Mm-hmm.
And so this all blew up yesterday after a Regents meeting at which the football coach has, all the universities got, all the university football coaches got new contracts that were approved yesterday. And on the same day, the UA acknowledged that athletic director Dave Hickey, who
would get a buyout,
is being pushed out, will be paid out through the duration of his contract, which goes through 2025.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's $1 million overall. Right, which, and this aggravates the situation because it's a pattern at the U of A when high officials are held accountable, they're just paid a lot of money. I mean, nobody gets
to
fired.
Disappear.
Yeah, nobody gets fired for cause, right? So the U of A was scrambling yesterday to tell everybody this wasn't a firing because that's the word that spread that he had been fired. Well, it looks like a firing, but then again, if he's getting paid out his entire contract, it isn't a formal firing. It's, I guess you could call it a UA firing because that's the way they do it for
Greg
people who Hansen make a lot of money.
Greg Hansen, your paper, wrote a column saying that, if I can kind of characterize it, that Hickey was enjoying a Sunday afternoon watching some football, and he gets a call from President Robbins saying he's fired. Now, that's pretty much what was reported in your paper.
Right.
Yeah.
So the point is it a firing or isn't it? Well, what do you call it when somebody's told against their will they have to go, but you're going to be paid $1 million. I mean, that's a nice firing. It's
yeah,
the kind of firing I'd like to get. So, I think that's the other thing that rankles a lot of people at the U of A is so people are held accountable at a certain level below the president, but they're paid handsomely to be held accountable. And then the accountability never reaches a higher level. This whole handling of the Hickey affair kind of has that same pattern that occurred with Lisa Rolney that in the past occurred with the provost, Liesl Folks, who got was pushed out but got a newly created job last year or in 2022. So, yeah, you're right. It's a feeling like this fire is burning and it's not going out anytime soon. You know, the natural conclusion one looks toward is the president being fired.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the sense that there are forces that are still working hard to prevent that from happening.
Yes.
Individuals and institutions working behind the scenes to ensure President Robbins stays in the job. I don't understand exactly why, other than, you know, they like him as a president. But there is, I think, a clash going on behind the scenes mm-hmm. over the president.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think there's a lot of UA employees who are just fed up with him mm-hmm. after the murder of Tom Meister and then this, mm-hmm. that was enough. But, you know, I'm sure there are people who would sing his praises for a lot of different, for his ambition, for a lot of different things.
It's a work
he's
in
done.
Progress, whether that, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You going to write about this?
Yeah, and it's fun to talk about it because it gets me inspired to write about it.
Good.
I was going to write about something else for Sunday's paper, but instead I'm going to write about this because it's so fascinating, the intricacies of this situation and the dynamism, you know, it changes moment to moment.
I'll be interested to hear what your conclusion is in the column.
Yeah, thanks. Sunday.
All right, Tim Steller, always a pleasure from the Arizona Daily Star. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, Dan Gibson is coming up with Weekend Watch. Dan's on the live line, and he'll be ready to go right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Whether you've considered an all-inclusive luxury cruise, an expedition adventure, or a relaxing river cruise, come to Bon Voyage Travel's annual showcase on March 3rd at the Hilton El Conquistador. Presentations will be offered throughout the day to provide you a chance to hear more about these travel brands and their exciting offers. Bill Buckmaster and I will be teaming up to present the travel trends of 2024. Visit bvtravel.com for more information on Bon Voyage Travel's free showcase on March 3rd.
And away we go with a weekend watch. Time to stir it up. Silver City and Grant County are great sponsor for a weekend watch. Silver City, only about a three-hour drive, a fun place to take a little road trip. The starting place, I always suggest people take a look at their fine website, southwestnewmexico.org. You'll be very tempted with all sorts of outdoor activities, some great places to stay and great places to eat as well. Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, ready to welcome you with open arms, and we're ready to welcome back the Weekend Watch host, Mr. Dan Gibson. Dan, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. What's going on this weekend? Did we miss Dillinger Days? Was that last week?
Last week. We talked about it.
Yeah, that's right. We did talk about it. So
No, listen, we would not have missed something as monumental as...
No, I always...
We're on top of it.
You know,
Bill,
it's
you
gotten
and me.
So Dillinger Days has become this January tradition, so that's always very good. And, of course, we got all sorts of activities in January that will segue into February. Of course, the Gem Show. But go ahead. What's on your calendar?
Well, I think this is a kind of a fun sliding into Gem Show season. Tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., it is a day at the Alfie at the Arizona Alfie Norville Gem and Mineral Museum. They are having their second annual free all-day event to kick off the gem and mineral season. There will be guest speaker presentations, networking with industry professionals, and then you can see all the new exhibit installations in their galleries. Admission to the museum, which is at the old Pima County Courthouse, is free all day. But there's also seating for presentations will be limited. You can see Dante Loretta from the OSIRIS-REx mission. He'll be speaking at 10 a.m. There'll also be light refreshments and an evening reception as well.
You know, I have heard that is an incredible museum, one of the finest certainly in the country, mineral and gem museum. Yeah.
I don't understand how science works, like, at all, but, like, it's a really incredible museum. Like, I'm just like, wow, these are really pretty rocks. But the, like, jewelry section, everything, it's incredible. It was a great thing to have in the Visit Tucson area when I worked over there.
Very cool. That's a great setup
also,
to the Gem Show. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if you've been, but there's a great event that's been happening for 5 years called Creative Mornings Tucson. It happens on Fridays at various locations around town, but it's a sort of celebration of creativity with different people from the community speaking about topics that are interesting to them. I spoke a couple years about liminalism, the space between two things. They're having their fifth anniversary celebration tonight at the downtown Clifton, 485 South Stone, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. There will be live music. There will be people who've been at the previous events, drink specials, food on sale, raffle prizes as well. So you can meet some of the hot, interesting, creative people of Tucson all in one place tonight.
Very cool. Creative thinkers all getting together in one place. All right, what else?
Yes. Well, you know, speaking of January, one of the things that happens been happening for the last, 7 or 8 years, is MLS preseason soccer happening at Keno Sports Complex. FC Tucson is kicking off their preseason events with a match between CF Montreal and Minnesota United of Major League Soccer. They'll be playing at the Keno North Sports Complex tomorrow at 6 p.m. I think tickets start at $14 or maybe $16, but there will be food and drink as well, and top-line American soccer all happening there.
Very cool. Major League Soccer coming to Tucson. All right, what else?
Well, there's if you enjoy the alcoholic beverages, I do on occasion, they're being a complimentary ponche tasting. Ponche is a fruit, traditional Mexican drink with fruit components made of natural cane spirit. They'll be having that at Westbound, which is in the Mercado St. Augustine Annex on the west side of I-10 at Congress. That's from 5 to 7 p.m. You can meet the owner of the brand and sip on the traditional drink from Colima, Mexico. They have flavors such as pomegranate, passion fruit, and tamarind. You can enjoy it chilled, warm, stuff like that. But maybe it's time to spice up margarita season with some ponche.
Sounds really cool. How is that spelled?
P-O-N-C-H-E. Hmm. The brand is Grand Ponche Mexicano.
Very cool. All right. Hey, Dan Gibson, hope you have a great weekend. Thank you, sir.
I will. It'll be me and the ponche.
There you go. All right. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. My thanks to Rose Brandt, making sure that podcast will be up in a timely manner this afternoon with all our interview with the chief. Thanks to Tom Fairbanks. Thanks to the community. Have a great weekend.